Welcome to the Spirituality What? Podcast, where we explore the mysteries, joys, and challenges of being spiritual beings navigating our unpredictable human experience we call life here on planet Earth. I'm your friendly guide, Rebecca, ready to jump into our adventure of the day. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Spirituality What? Podcast. My name is Rebecca. Let's get this day started. It's Wednesday. It's time for a new episode of this podcast. I did just want to mention one thing today. If you have an opportunity to tell one person this week, one new person that you haven't talked to yet about this podcast, I would really appreciate it. I'm looking to see if we can get this podcast to grow, to see if this is something that I am going to continue doing. My original goal was to just do this for 2024, but if it's successful enough, I might continue to do it into 2025. So today we are going to talk to Iris Angelis. She's an author, artist, mentor, healer, workshop facilitator, chiropractor, and applied kinesiologist in Australia. Your Body is the Portal to Your Soul is a book that she wrote, and it's based on a combination of her own lived experiences and insights that she's gained from seeing over 25,000 patients after nearly 30 years of chiropractic and kinesiology practice. She has a deep passion to empower people to thrive in their lives and bodies so that they can offer the world the gift of their unique soul frequency. She lives with her husband and her beautiful cat in the north coast of Australia. And today, Iris and I are going to talk about spiritual bodies. So I was really excited to get to know Iris a little bit. And actually, I met Iris through that podcastguest.com website that I mentioned the last couple of weeks. And it was really fun making up and kind of inventing and talking through this episode. It really felt like this episode was the embodiment of the podcast in itself. And so Iris and I get into a little bit of the details about what is kinesiology and embodiment. We get to talk a lot about more of that word. What about our bodies as energy fields? You know, the role of intention in embodiment. How do we get out of our minds and back into our bodies? But also, how do we get out of our bodies and into our minds in the first place? And kind of where does that start in our childhood? And how does that result in disconnection from our bodies? And how do we know? How can we know that we're disconnected from our bodies and what's happening there? We also talk about the inherent worth that we have as beings, the feedback loops that our bodies have with us, kind of letting us know what's going on, the work hard, play hard mentality, and kind of the teachings in our culture that we are worthy through what we do and kind of doing rather than just being. So this is a really intense and awesome episode. Iris and I talk a lot of cool stuff, and we're just going to jump right into it now. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Spirituality What? Podcast. I'm Rebecca. I'm your host. We're here today with my new friend, Iris. Iris, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Hello, Rebecca. It's so lovely to be here with you today. So my name is Iris Angelis. I am an author of two books. One is called Passion to Thrive, Reclaim Your Life's Potential, Purpose, Passion, and Power, which is a women's empowerment book. And my second book is called Your Body is the Portal to Your Soul. Your Body Has the Answers. Make It Your Best Friend for Life, which is an everyone empowerment book. And I've also created a course that goes with that book and regularly run workshops that can be attended by Zoom. And I've also been a chiropractor for nearly 30 years and an applied kinesiologist for close on 20.
Awesome. Before we get into the question, the first question of the hour, I don't know. I think most people know what a chiropractor is. Can you explain really quickly what an applied kinesiologist is, does?
Yeah. Sure. So it was a chiropractor who first found applied kinesiology. So part of being a chiropractor is testing muscles for strength. And he found this one muscle that just wasn't responding as you'd expect it to. And instead of dismissing it, he went, I wonder why that is. And then he went about finding what it was that would get that muscle working properly again. So people who do applied kinesiology are primary healthcare practitioners. There is a separate offshoot of applied kinesiology called just kinesiology, and that's people who aren't primary healthcare physicians. And basically, what we do is we use a muscle test. So if we get a weak response, it gives us an insight into what's going on for that body, and then we have an insight to when that problem has been corrected, basically. So, and if the person comes in next time and that muscle's weak again, it means that there's something else that's causing that dysfunction in the body. So it's basically a diagnostic tool, and it just opens up and expands the scope of what you can do for a person, like exponentially. Quick example, I remember being a chiropractor, and I would have been about 6 or 7 years in practice at that point. And I saw this lady who had a scar on her throat because she'd had a thyroid taken out. And I just knew that that scar was a problem, but I didn't know how to fix it. And that's now a, 2 minute procedure, and scars are super important. So, like all these things at once upon a time would just limit how much I could help a person. You know, those boundaries get expanded and expanded and
Yeah.
expanded. So that's a really cool
Okay.
modality. And that's also where a lot of the insights have come from for me to write the second book.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. Cool. All right. We will get back. We'll get more into that for sure. I have a couple of follow-up questions. But before we jump into the topic of today, which is spiritual bodies, this is like the podcast that is the podcast. This is the episode that is kind of the embodiment of the podcast, if you will, and we'll talk about that word in a little bit
Yes.
as well. But what this is the question that we ask all the interviewees to start the podcast. So, first question, here we go. What does spirituality mean to you?
To me, spirituality is how do you conduct yourself in your life. So when you are out and about living your life, are you embodying the frequencies or the energies of kindness, compassion, love, gratitude, appreciation, care? Is that what you're rippling out basically from your body and into the community and the other people that you encounter, or beings in general, like not just humans but animals and plants and the earth herself? Because my observation is that you can do, the same thing, but the intention behind that one thing can be really different, and it's going to have a really different effect in the world depending on whether you are coming from one place or the other. So for me, spirituality is very much an applied way of being in the world. My observation is that, a lot of people, go to church once a week for an hour. Controversy alert here. But then the rest of the time, maybe not a lot, but I've noticed people do go to church and profess one thing, and then, the rest of the hours of the day, of the day of the week, they are being self-serving and uncaring and not compassionate. And to me, that's incongruent. Like if you want to live a spiritual life, it's about how do you show up when things get tricky. What choices do you make when things get tricky?
Yeah, it's not just talking the talk, right? It's walking the walk,
Absolutely,
doing the
yeah.
work. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Exactly.
yeah.
Cool. Awesome. All right. So let's start really quickly with embodiment. Now we both use that word. I obviously use that word in purpose because I knew we were going to talk about it today. But so what we're talking about spiritual bodies, right? And this podcast is about spiritual beings, the being that is spiritual of us, which is maybe more or different than our bodies and the physical human forms that we operate in. So, what does embodiment actually mean to you?
So if you start with everything is energy, right? Things that are matter are made up from atoms, which in turn are made up mostly out of space and tiny little packets of energy. So matter is really just energy that slowed down a long, long, long way. And you remember the analogy in the book, which is, you've got a glass of water and you put it in the freezer, and then you get a layer of ice on top, and that's
Yes,
the slow
yes.
version of water. So in the same way, if if we've got our beingness, then the body is kind of the densest part of our energy field. Yeah. So if you think of your body as an energy field, then embodiment means that you've got another energy, a frequency that can live in there. So, for example, the frequency of love or of kindness. Think of it like, you know, you're having your beautiful hot cup of tea and then you put a bit of honey in it, yeah? So the tea is the body and then the honey is the energy or the frequency that you're embodying. So it's going to make the tea completely different, even although it doesn't look any different. So it's like you can have these energy grids that are just overlapping or interlocking. So it's literally embodiment is what is the frequency with which you allow your molecules to vibrate. Does that make sense? Is that a bit abstract?
Yeah, so is it? Yeah, no, it does. And I was just thinking, like, so it's the intention, kind of.
Yes, intention is part of it, but the intention is kind of the starting point. Yeah, okay. If you say, okay, I'm just thinking back to early 2020 when I started a practice of peace. So every time I would do a yoga practice, I would, my word for the time would be peace. So that was the intention I was setting.
Okay.
And then I noticed after a year or two of doing this, that peace was literally the frequency that would be present for me, you know, regardless of whether I set the intention or not. So it's like the intention is the beginning point and the embodiment is when it's actually landed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like in order to embody something, you've got to actually, I don't want to say affirm, but you've got to tune into that energy regularly so that the body knows how to carry that energy. In medicine, there's a little maxim that says, you know, nerves that fire together, wire together. Basically, things that you do a lot of, you get better at. So embodiment is the same thing. If you focus on a particular something, then because you keep focusing on it, you will get better at actually feeling it or embodying it as you go.
How do we embody things then? Is it really just thinking, using our brain to think, you know, peace, I'm in peace, everything is peaceful. Like, what does that actually look like?
It's very much for me, it's a feeling proposition. Mm. So if you look at the field of the heart, it's much bigger than the field of the brain. And it has, they call it a little brain of its own. It's all sensory. So basically, you've got these feelings or these perceptions that happen in the heart that get fed back into the brain. So thinking yourself through life is actually a symptom of embodiment. I think you've got that as one of your questions coming up. So in order to embody anything, you've got to actually get out of your mind and into your body. That is the challenge of our times. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. we've been taught, oh, you know, think positive or you know, whatever. And it's like, well, we need to actually drop our awareness back into our bodies.
We need to feel positive, not just think positive. We need to feel positive. Right? That's what you're
that's
saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Or anything else, you know, like the reason why we stop feeling things in the first place is because I think most of us get taught that there are certain emotions or certain behaviors that are completely unacceptable. And what that means is then when that emotion comes up, then we go, oh, no, I can't do that. So we disown that part of ourselves. And the more bits of ourselves that we disown, the more those energies, I think of them like a dark cloud, sit in our bodies. And because it's so uncomfortable for us to hold that in our awareness, it's like we try to escape more and more, and then we end up in our mind, in our thoughts, for example. Mm. Interestingly, some people can use emotions in the same way, you know, drama merchants, yeah. It's almost like they don't know they're alive unless they have a really strong drama going on at the time. They're actually deflecting from what's really uncomfortable by having that drama as well. So just because you've got a lot of emotion doesn't necessarily mean that you're actually sitting with the discomfort, yeah.
True.
So yeah. What are the ways that we are resisting or deflecting away from what we feel is uncomfortable? That's the crux. Like if you have an uncomfortable emotion coming up, you don't need to enact a big behavior to go with it. Again, that can, you know, like little kids do, you know, little kids need to do a temper tantrum and get all that out. But that's because they haven't yet got the emotional equipment to actually go, oh, okay, I'm feeling really, really angry right now. And I can feel it in my body and then go, okay, well, here's the anger and I'll just allow it to be there, and then because you're allowing it to be there, it's like anything else. If you allow it to be there, it can go and dissipate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if we resist sitting with that, then that's going to get stuck somewhere in our energy flow or in our body.
Exactly. And we do talk a little bit about that when in our mental health kind of episode with Deb, and when we were talking about kind of the myth of normal, which is I keep talking about that book a lot because I just reread it and it's like a really interesting book. But this like suppression versus repression of kind of emotions, and like one is, you know, a little bit more conscious and one is learned behavior, because you've learned through being a child and having to, I think it was like the attachment part of a child, like when you're having an emotion or an interaction and the results of the interaction are negative, as a child, you automatically think it's my fault. This is a bad thing. I shouldn't do this. I can't do this. I can't act like this, because the other option is I'm not in a safe environment. And that's not an acceptable, you know, option as a child who is, you know, especially as an infant, but as a child who is dependent on these adults and this environment to sort of survive and thrive. Or yeah. At least survive. So there's this story that we just tell that we don't even know. We know that children do it, but as a child, you don't know that you're doing this, but you just tell yourself this story. I can't. Mm. I mean, I think anger is a really good example. You know, temper tantrums. I can't have a temper tantrum. You learn I can't be angry. I can't show anger. That's I can't right. have anger. You know, and then it becomes this like suppressed or repressed, depending on this sort of the situation, this emotion. And so I think what you're saying then is, not only does that cause issues in your energy field, in your energy body, in your actual body, like with myth of normal, we learn can like lead to actual physical problems later in your life. But what it also makes you do is get away from your heart center and more into your brain. And so you think a lot of things, but you are then disconnected from what's actually happening in your physical body.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And so when we say disconnected, we really just mean unaware. Is that like an accurate, what do you think about that?
Oh, good question. the result is certainly unaware. But I think it's a bit deeper than that. I think it is unaware of even being unaware, if that makes sense. Like we don't know.
Yeah.
So I can be unaware of something and kind of know there's something I don't know, or something that I'm not grasping, or something I'm not getting. But I think the disconnection is unaware to the point of not knowing that there's something missing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like unconscious unawareness kind of versus unconscious, conscious kind of awareness. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I feel like, okay, so how do I know if that's where I am? So we talk about this with Myth of Normal and Deb as well. Like if you're all the way to the point where you've got MS or some other autoimmune disorder, you might have some trauma that has disconnected you from your body, and your body is like acting out to try to get your attention. So that's like a really severe case. But how might I know? What are some of the symptoms of me knowing to be able to catch on and say, oh, I'm like disconnected from myself?
I think the easiest way is your life actually working for you, right? Mm. Like are you living the life that your heart desires? So I'm going to make a distinction here between the life that you've been taught to want, you know, the big house and the boat and the expensive holidays.
American dream or whatever. Yeah,
for example, yeah. Well, I don't know if that's the American dream. Anyway, so all these things.
Defense, I don't know whose dream that is.
All that stuff, like all this stuff that we've been taught is desirable, and that's what you should be striving for. Mm. That's not what I'm talking about. Like that's very much a brain thing and a disconnection thing. What I'm talking about is, are you living the life that your heart desires? So are your relationships mutual and supportive and loving and caring? And you know, when you hug your friend or your spouse, do you feel that warmth between your hearts that tells you, wow, I'm loved, you know? Abundance is part of it. Like, do you have enough money to pay your bills and feed yourself and you know, keep a roof over your head. And I'll just digress here. My observation is that people who generally are connected, they have a life of, I've got enough and then some. You know, you don't need to have billions of dollars in your account to live a connected life or to live a life of meaning and fulfillment. In fact, if you have that much money in your account, you're probably deeply in lack, I think, because you're just, you know, hoarding, basically. And you're not abundant if you can't give. You know, the place that you work, because most of us do work in some way, is that a place that you go to and you hate it? Or is that a place where you can, you know, have connection with other people, or you can do something that you know is meaningful? And I'm a chiropractor these days, but once upon a time, I used to work as a cleaner in a hospital. You know, like I could do that job and feel like I was contributing something meaningful. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a high status, highly paid job. It is, you know, the work I do, is that something where I can find something that, you know, makes my day feel like I've done something that's worthwhile.
Yeah.
So that's how you know whether or not you are disconnected or not. So what that looks like is a person who's not living a disconnected life. So a person who lives let's call it a connected life, is somebody who has got a sense of peace in their own being. So it's not frantic. It's not, you know, yelling. It's not depressed. It's not mean. It's not, you know, I will say this because I know that's going to hurt you and that's going to give me a little ego boost. Yeah.
Sure.
It's actually a life of, I am worthy and you are worthy. And just because you are worthy doesn't mean I'm worth less. Yeah. So you can come from a point of view of seeing everybody's inherent worth. Interesting word, that everybody, because everybody has an inherent worth as well. You know, every being having an inherent worth and then living accordingly, you know, like respecting that and nurturing that and appreciating that about everybody and every being that you interact with in the course of a day. You know, it could look like, if you look at the likes of, you know, Greg Braden or Bruce Lipton, I'm sure that they live very, very abundant lives, but they are actually living lives of empowering others and bringing a really big message through to humanity in general. So that's very different from somebody who's got, you know, a gazillion dollars in the bank account and just tries to make other people do what they want them to do and try to control them. So that's some of the differences between a connected life and a disconnected life, some of the symptoms, as it were.
Yeah. So you talk, I feel like this is a good segue. So what's the book called again? I didn't write down the title. Actually, here, the second one, portal, your body is the portal to your soul. Yes, I did write it down.
Yes.
So I did read that book in preparation for this podcast, and it's like, it's a very good book, and I definitely will put the link in the show notes and everyone should have a look. But there's a section, I feel like this relates. There's a section where you talk about little ways that we are sort of disconnected from our body. And this is where we could potentially maybe even get a little bit into intuition, but like on the day, so we have this high level perspective of what it looks like to be a connected person versus sort of a disconnected person. But on the day to day, sure, your theme is maybe connected, but on the day to day, there's still opportunities to become disconnected, kind of, you know, in individual tasks or kind of what you're doing. And so if you can talk like a little bit about those in our everyday life, kind of the feedback loop with ourselves and sort of like what that looks like and what we can kind of pay attention to. I think this is a really interesting part of this conversation.
This is the year I'll just, isn't it?
Yes.
So my own personal moment to go, oh, hang on, what am I doing here, is when I'm, you know, in a task and my body has been telling me that, you know, we're tired of this right now. And that could be, you know, like my focus wavers generally, but it could also be like somebody gets sore shoulders if they're sitting in front of a computer or something like that, or get a bit headachy or get a bit annoyed. And you know, you've got 5 minutes worth left of this task. And I find myself thinking, I'll just do this and then I'll go and, go and get a glass of water, walk around, do some stretches, whatever it is, pet my cat. But then because I've already used up all the resources available at this point in time, and my focus wavers and my body's uncomfortable and I'm a bit annoyed anyway, that 5 minute task usually ends up taking about 20 minutes. And because I started from a depleted state, by the time I get to the end of that task, I'm super depleted and I'm gonna need to rest for 2 hours or do something else for 2 hours rather than just 15 minutes to complete that one task. Whereas, if I take the 15 minutes that my body requires, I can go back and complete that task in 5 minutes. So ultimately it's like 2.5 hours versus 20 minutes ultimately. And it's also, it's then not 2 hours of enjoyment. It's then 2 hours of just feeling blah. So my own personal one is, oh, I'll just do this. And it's actually really funny because I remember when we first started our business, I was at in a group and I said, oh, I'm just doing all this work and I'm so exhausted and all that stuff. And I thought I was aware, but then one of the participants says, well, you're actually not aware if you don't act on what your body's asking you to do. And at that time, this is 10 years ago, I didn't even know what she meant, right? And like that's something that hasn't actually dropped until later. And then I thought, well, I will actually just stop when my body tells me to stop. And interestingly, when I was studying, I would literally do that. I would be like halfway through a paragraph and I go, no, I need to just get up and move now, or no, I need to get up and get a cup of tea or whatever. And then I go back and pick up where I left. And that worked really, really well, even though it was like mid paragraph, right? No, right now. Okay.
And it doesn't, like, logically, you're like, no, I just need to finish the paragraph. Like, it doesn't make any sense to
I
do
just
that.
need to
But,
finish that
like,
paragraph, right? Exactly. So it's like I had the hardware, I had the technology, I knew how to do that. But again, but this is then back to self-worth and being present for oneself and one's own life again, like you were saying to start with. It's like, oh no, I'll just finish this because then I can go and have fun. It's like, so more recently, I think, well, why don't we make joy the actual fuel for our lives, right? Like, if we start with something in our lives, in our day, that makes us feel joyful in our bodies, and whatever that might be for you, I don't know. It could be like a really beautiful breakfast, or it could be going for a walk on the beach, or it could be doing a bit of yoga, or it could be lying in, if that's your thing, and reading a book or whatever. Like if we start with something that really nurtures us and feeds us and makes us feel abundant, if we then step into our lives, we can give from an overflowing cup. Whereas certainly the way I was raised or what I picked up when I was growing up, I'm not going to say the way I was raised because ultimately that's what I took from it. It's not necessarily what the intention was
Yeah,
behind what I was taught.
exactly.
So what I took away from was, okay, you do your work first and then you go play, right? Do your homework and then you go play.
I'm nodding. Yes. Work
And
hard, then you play
yeah.
hard. That's the order that you do it in.
That
That is what I took away from my growing up as well.
strong work ethic, which like makes you an excellent citizen and an excellent cog in the machine, but it literally robs your life of joy because by the time you get to, especially as an adult, right? Because like the chores never finish, yeah. So, if by the time you get to, oh, it's time to play now, you're just too exhausted and, well, speaking about me, I'm too exhausted and resentful to actually really get that enjoyment out of it. Like it's back to intention, it's back to awareness, it's back to connection. So, what's the frequency I want to live my life in? I want to live in a frequency of self-worth, and I want to live in a frequency of joy, and I want to live a frequency of connection, because if I'm depleted, I'm going to be snarly at my partner, right? That then means that, the next morning you wake up, it's like, oh, we had that thing yesterday, like it just snowballs. So, again, if I find myself showing, oh, I'll just, or if I find myself going, oh, my back's a bit sore, I've been sitting at the computer for what, 2 hours already? No wonder my body wants a breather, yeah? Our body doesn't ask for unreasonable stuff for the most part, right? Like, it's like, hey, like, do I then in that moment have make that choice of joy and self-worth and go, yep, I'm gonna nurture my body now because it's just done this marathon stint in front of the computer and I didn't even realize. And devices are so good at that, aren't they? Like they just suck you right
Yes,
in and
they
next thing you
are.
know, there's
It's
half a
10
day's
hours later.
gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for some people for sure.
You bring up a really interesting point, and you said this at the beginning too when you were talking about the I'll just story. So I personally,
I resonated extremely with this entire part of this book. And I was like, I just now I need to pay attention. Like, the interesting part is before you get to Aljust, I feel like your body has already told you. You were saying like you kind of like move your shoulders around or you like yawn or there's like something else in your body. But for some reason, we're like, that doesn't mean anything. I'll just do this other thing. Right. And so it's like, why, like, what is happening? Why are we doing that? Our body is literally telling us. It's not even intuition at this point. We're not talking about some butterflies in your stomach sort of woo-woo feeling. We're literally talking about a physical reaction that your body is physically having in this plane that you could see in a mirror and you're ignoring it. like, what is going on there?
Well, that's exactly the culture we live in and how we've been conditioned in, like, we've been conditioned that our worth is what we do, right? Mm. If you want worth, you gotta do, perform, achieve. And we've been educated away from knowing that we are actually worthy because we are a human
being,
right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's this, you know, my own personal favorite own quote is one of them is, you are a miraculous being of divine breath and stardust. Yeah. Like, our bodies are made out of water, mostly water that comes from the deep reaches of outer space and has all these light that goes with it that's in our bodies, right? And the atoms come from these suns that exploded like way, way out there. And that got collected in Mother Earth somehow, and now Mother Earth is feeding us all these, you know, minerals, and, you know, our bodies are making these incredible little molecules out of them that makes it look like a body. So that's miraculous in its own right. And then in this body that has its own intelligence and its own desire to thrive and its own, you know, journey to have on planet Earth, we land this being that's literally divine breath or a sliver of God or a hologram of the whole, whatever you want to call it. And that gets to live in this body. And like, the other thing that we've been educated away from is the importance of the frequency that we vibrate at. Yeah. So if we vibrate in joy, if we vibrate in care, if we vibrate in compassion, if we vibrate in connection, if we vibrate in appreciation and gratitude and beauty, like, that has a ripple effect. And the bigger, the more you can embody this frequency, the bigger your ripple effect is. So if we've been taught that that's A, not actually important, and B, it's actually not even real, right? Because essentially it's like, well, yeah, no. So then the only thing we're left is, what can I provide? What can I give? What can I do in order to get some outside acknowledgement of my worth, right? So now you're dependent on somebody else or something else reflecting your worth back to you, rather than actually sitting in your heart and knowing, I'm worthy because I'm a human being, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the whole cultural thing around, you've got to be doing all the time. It's like, no, I'm a human being first. And then I can do things, exactly. And if I can own my worth, and if I can, you know, have my frequency of abundance, if I can have my frequency of joy, then the things that I do are going to carry that frequency. And then suddenly I'm amplifying that in the world, but it's actually not necessary. Yeah, I think of, if you like, picture a big bowl, and in that bowl are all these little pebbles or these little beads or whatever. Yeah. So that's humanity, and each bead is a human. So this must be a really big bowl. But anyway, it's metaphorical. And each of these beads is gold, right? But sometimes gold comes packaged in something that looks not gold, yeah? So if we can all own our gold, then that's going to inspire other people to know, oh, actually, she doesn't feel guilty about resting. Huh. Yeah. Like, does anybody else do that?
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining Iris and I today for part one of her two-part episode. I hope you love listening to her wonderful accent as much as I do. It's been such an interesting experience to have three Danish people already make up interviewees on this podcast site. Denmark, as I've mentioned before, has a special place in my heart, and I keep finding more Danes around the world that make little special places in my heart too. So anyway, we will be back next week with the part two of her episode, and we will see you then. Thank you for joining me on today's spirituality what? Adventure. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. Visit us on Instagram at spirituality.what to interact, tell us what spirituality means to you, and even provide some of your own personal musings. Human on, you phenomenal spiritual beings.